Lois, why don't you start?
All right, I could. So Matt, prior to ACA, I had my own kind of interesting hybrid accounting practice. I worked with small business owners and not-for-profits and some individuals, kind of like a CFO. I didn't at the time do taxes, which I kind of laugh at now that I do taxes. I kind of never thought I wanted to do that. And the practice was going really well. It was successful. It was profitable. But I was getting a little bored. And I also, my husband and I, were trying to figure out how, figure this whole finance, our future out, retirement, college. We're solid middle-income people. I had tried to find a financial advisor myself, and we didn't meet anyone's criteria. You know, we didn't have enough, quote, investable assets. And I thought that was kind of crazy. And so very typical of me, I said, well, I'll just go back to school and figure it out myself. So I did the CFP thing while I still had my practice. So it took me probably 2 years to go through the CFP process because I did it a class at a time and, you know, all that stuff. And I passed my CFP exam, and I went to a NAFA conference, and I knew while I was going through the CFP program, I had gone to an FPA, a Financial Planning Association event, and got recruited really, really hard by Ameriprise. Ameriprise is they hire a lot of CFPs, and I was so turned off by that recruitment process and by the selling aspect. I was pretty clear, even while I was going through, there's no way that's the path I'm taking. I didn't know what the path would be. I just knew what it would not be. And so I found NAPFA and was lucky that there was a national conference in Chicago. And I went to that, and at the time I was really leaning pretty heavily toward Garrett because I didn't know much about ACA. But I really did a lot of due diligence for both ACA and Garrett, and I felt that because I've been a small business owner for 12 years, that their model isn't sustainable over the long term. I'm like, I get you do not want to constantly be marketing yourself. So I met a couple of ACA planners, and they invited me. Before I committed, I went to a conference in Arizona. And Matt, I have to tell you, I walked in, and I was so impressed by the people, their intelligence, the sense of collaboration. I'm like, okay, I want to do this. This is exactly how the kind of practice I want to have. So I joined, in fact, almost 2 years ago next month, I completed my training. And I can honestly tell you there is no way my practice would be where it is if it weren't for ACA. The training is amazing. Having people I can reach out to. In fact, you know, I've called Ken to say, Ken, I got this going on. Can you help me? It's just an amazing organization. And my clients understand it. It's not too complicated. And I find it fills a big need out there. So that's my background. Ken?
Okay, so now when you say you, I'm sorry. I suppose since it's just me here, you guys don't mind me interjecting. So when you say your clients understand, what does that mean? Clients understand that you're looking maybe to outside sources like other members of ACA?
Yeah, they not only understand that, they understand when we have our meetings, I'm not talking to them about concepts they don't understand. If we're looking at their insurance policies, we're sitting down and looking at them, and part of my role is to help them look at a declarations page and kind of say, this is what this means. Because I'm not selling them an insurance product, I can really help them see, well, I might have too much coverage or I don't have enough. And we've built a relationship where they feel comfortable talking to me and asking the stupid question. And then I can say, I don't know the answer to that, but I have colleagues that do. And it's initially, too, because when I was new, they're like, Lois, you're new. Why should we work with you? I can say, well, it may just be me, But I have this whole network of brilliant people who, if I don't know the answer, I can reach out and they'll give me support, or they'll mm-hmm. they'll point me in the right direction.
And that's another big fear that I've got, is just approaching a client and saying, "Well, Matt, you seem like a nice guy. You've got a law degree. Maybe you have some smarts, not necessarily, but if I'm your first client, I mean, why would I, as a prospective client, why would they take that step? I think that would be a natural hurdle and a huge hurdle to overcome in terms of getting, your practice going.
So. Yeah, that's a very valid concern, and I have to say that the training that you go through with ACA, they walk you through, and believe me, I have looked over the script so many times before I meet with a client. They help you convey your value. And it's really frightening the first few times you do it because you're like, oh, my gosh, what, how are they going to not see through me?
Mm-hmm.
But they just, in the training, and the veterans like Ken will say, we know more when we're brand new than our prospective clients know, just right off the top.
True.
And learning how to articulate your value, and at first, honestly, I was verbatim doing the script. It's amazing. People believe me. Wow, it really does work.
Right.
Lois, so I can just interject. When you say people believe you, were you telling them anything that wasn't true?
Yeah, no. That's true, Ken. I wasn't.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm fortunate, Matt, to be in the group of instructors who work with new advisors, new members of who have just joined ACA to help them learn not only our systems of delivering financial advice, but also how to convey our value to a potential client so they'll know that, yes, Matt is the person we want to hire. In the course of doing that, I've learned that the person that's most important to sell on your value is yourself as the advisor. Once mm-hmm. you are confident that, yes, you really do have value to add, and you probably have a lot more value to add than you may be aware of, it becomes much easier to persuade the person who is wondering about whether they should hire you or not.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and that's the thing, confidence.
Yeah.
Your client can see it.
And, of course, that some of that comes with some time. Sorry, Lois, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but
No, Ken, I think that's an excellent answer. Yeah.
excuse me.
Yeah, so Ken, why don't you say a little bit about how you got into it? I don't think I've heard your story.
Well, I was working. I started my professional life as a lawyer. I always wanted to be a lawyer until I started practicing law. And I had 3 years practicing law where I did not fit well with what law demanded of lawyers at the time. I am much more collaborative by nature and made the unfortunate choice, and it was my choice, to pursue a career in litigation. That was a very bad fit. I went into service doing property casualty risk management after that, and during that time discovered financial planning just as an idea. Was looking at financial planning for myself and my family, and became so interested in it that I wondered what it would be like to work in financial planning. So I started studying the CFP curriculum while I was still in the public sector, and along the way discovered ACA. I knew I wanted to be fee only. I'd never worked in a commission compensated setting, but I had charged by the hour, and I was wondering how I would ever be able to bring myself to charge $995 for a full financial plan. And then I tried doing the math to figure out how many of those I needed to make the living that I thought I wanted to make, and it was going to be pretty tough. I was not sure how I was going to do it. What ACA taught me, both in my initial training and in the support that I've gotten from other ACA members over the years, and it is a very supportive community of professionals, they taught me how to recognize my own value so that I would not be charging clients too little. They taught me ideas like when you discount your fee, you discount the value that the client ascribes to your services. And I didn't believe that until I saw it in action. But as ACA members, we never have to compete on price, and at the very same time, we are exceptionally competitive on price. And one of the reasons we can do that is we don't waste time doing things that are very popular in financial services, but that deliver very little value to the client. Mm-hmm. So you may remember from my presentation last year, Matt, and
yeah.
Lois, the presentation he's talking about is my Financial Planning for Lawyers Continuing Legal Education Seminar. I spent some time talking about here are a variety of things that don't work, and so therefore don't do them. Well, you can take that to a professional level as well, and since it doesn't work to follow the stock market all the time, I have no idea what the market's doing today. I have a vague impression of what it did yesterday. Knowing that with more precision won't add any more value to my clients. Helping them see a way that they can save another 3% of their income out of every paycheck will make a huge difference to them in the long run, a difference that they can see and understand, and that I can help them motivate to, be motivated to actually do something about it. And that's part of what I've gotten from ACA is the understanding of what really makes a difference for the real people who are my clients, not for, a pension fund that I'm never going to, not only will I never get a chance to advise that fund, they're not the kind of, a pension fund is not what I want to serve. I want to work with real people solving real people's problems. And part of the benefit that I get from having adopted the ACA approach and deciding to make that my way of doing financial planning, is I get those moments of seeing the weight come off a client's shoulders when I tell them things like, well, if you're going to run out of money, you're going to have to start developing some really bad habits because you're actually in much better shape than you thought you were.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the relief on people's faces when they hear that is a very large intangible benefit for me. I get more of that because I get to pick and choose who my clients are. And learning why it's important to pick and choose who your clients are is part of the value that ACA conveys. People call me all the time saying, we have this mailing list of potential clients of people who have said they're unhappy with their current custodian, that we want to sell you for $300. And I say, thank you. Your next phone call is going to be more valuable to you. That's not how I get clients, and I don't need that to get clients. So it's a very different model than most of the financial services world uses, because most of the financial services world is not truly interested in service to clients the same way that we are in ACA. And I think, to be honest, many other people in financial services are truly interested in service to clients, but not the majority of us. And that gives us a competitive edge to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ken, had you looked at another affiliation other than ACA?
Well, at the time that I was looking, I joined ACA with the January 2000 training class. And the Garrett model, for example, it may not even have existed at the time, and at the least I wasn't aware of it. There were a number of other ways I could have gone. They all would have required me to compromise on my decision that I wanted to be fee-only. So mm-hmm. I didn't investigate other models. There weren't a lot of other models around to choose from, and I never discovered any that I thought were would allow me to continue to look in the mirror every morning and be satisfied with what I saw. And I was very impressed with my discussions with ACA members from the start. At the time, ACA was actually a project of its founder, Burt Whitehead, and was not yet the self-governing organization it is now, the membership organization that it is now, and has been for I think about a dozen years now, if I'm remembering right. The confidence that I heard from people who had no financial interest in having more ACA members was really important. The first ACA member I met was at a College for Financial Planning conference, one of I think the only member that's passed on since I've joined, the late Stuart Farnell, when I explained to him what I wanted to do and that I wanted to work in a consultative capacity, he said, "I'd strongly encourage you to consider ACA." And I didn't think I was qualified, but it turned out I was wrong. I was more qualified than I realized. And that's a similar theme to this idea of, are you qualified to get in front of clients? Well, your interest in these things alone probably means that you already know more than your clients do and can already give them advised guidance on some aspects of their money at least. So, it may be that you already have friends who are saying, "Hey, I got a quick question for you about something money related." And it's not unlike identifying who qualifies as an expert witness. It's somebody who knows more than average, and I'd be willing to bet that you already know more than average about personal finance, not just investments, but probably how they relate to other things too. A lot of what I got from ACA was distilling that into the things that really worked at my training class. They asked us to describe where we came from. And I said, "I've got a lot of book learning. I finished the CFP curriculum. Now I have to learn how to work with people." And that's exactly what I got from ACA. In retrospect, I'm not even sorry that I didn't have a choice of other options to go to, because it was a very, very good fit for me.
Right. Well, I mean, and that's my biggest concern is just getting clients, pure and simple. When both of us were at your seminar, I mentioned that I had worked with a little bit with John Sestina, and I told some of my various clients that I was going to be heading in that direction. They said, "Oh, that's nice and all that," and then the problem I experienced is they kept actually referring at a higher rate the more legal work. So although I would think that my clients would be, very receptive to, a financial planner, I didn't find that to be the case. So now I'm thinking, okay, now what am I going to do? Is this going to work? So now I'm going outside of my circle of acquaintances, and, I mean, it's really, truly somebody fresh that I have no connection with. And Lois, for you, I've always thought that, that being involved in accounting would be just a perfect fit for somebody to go into financial planning, because I mean you're already reviewing their finances, you're sensing their stress, and you see that there's places that they could be doing better, and they already have that confidence in you. That is my largest concern, and I guess I would ask the two of you, how did you start off getting clients? And Lois, you've been CFP, or your practice has been around for how long?
I passed my CFP just 2 years ago.
Okay.
So, and I passed my CFP 3 years ago in May, and then it took me...
I'm going to have to excuse myself for just a minute, but I'll be right back.
Okay. It took me about it, you know, I really took a lot of due diligence. Okay, I passed it, but to figure out how I wanted my practice.
Right.
So I really did not, you know, officially, I finished ACA training in May of 2011. So I really say I've been in business almost 2 years. And my first group of clients did know me, not well. You know, it was one of those circle, you know, of acquaintance kind of things. And I am now getting clients that are finding me through web searches from the CFP board is doing an intensive advertising campaign on public radio right now. And I'm just being inundated with calls for that. But you hear, you know, you have to be comfortable pretty much always marketing yourself. And you have to be comfortable saying, oh, did I tell you the transition I've just made? I'm no longer doing accounting. I'm doing fee-only financial planning. And, why, you know, there's a fine line between being obnoxious about it but letting people know. I don't think I've done, in fact, I really have not done enough marketing, but I'm growing, and figuring out how to manage that growth is always a little tricky. At least for me, it's been tricky, and I still have a few accounting clients.
The right kind of problem to have, Lois.
It's a great problem to have. It is, Ken, you're right. It's like, wow. In fact, I think 2 years in, I can finally say I get it. Like, I understand the entire process because I've gone through
it. So how are you doing now that you're two years in?
Oh, I'm profitable. I'm getting new clients. I'm making money. I love it.
And so the first year, were you profitable?
Well, here's the advantage I had. I have always had accounting income because I just cash flow-wise, I have kids in college. I couldn't give that up. So I've never not been profitable, but I now earn more doing financial planning than I do doing accounting. So for me, it's been profitable. And I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't.
Right.
You know?
And what kinds of things are you doing to attract new clients?
Well,
do you do
the
any
very first
seminars
thing I did
or?
I do some public speaking, but I have an office that I moved into before I even had a client. But the way my house works and the way I live in Chicago, it just would not have worked. And so I stumbled into this amazing, beautiful office, and I had an open house. I invited about 90 people. And
about how many?
90.
Okay.
Just people, because I've always volunteered. I've been involved in my community my whole life. And from that event alone, I got 4 clients. Now, they didn't all sign up the next day, and, you know, but it was, so that was my initial core. I had literature out. I just let them see, and it was, you know, I got clients that way. I've done some speaking. I'm pretty passionate about paying for college, so I've done some speaking at the high school and at my daughter's college about money and finance. And I also, I happen to be in a really good zip code. 28% of my clients live within one zip code, and 49% of them can walk to my office. Hmm. So in Chicago, and I live in one of those neighborhoods that's a really big component, and I'm surrounded by 3 Edward Jones offices.
It's like your farm club, isn't it, Lois?
It is. It's really, because you want to, like, I can make a sale. Someone comes in from Edward Jones, you can almost sign them on the spot. Because you're like, let me show you how much that's really costing you. Mm-hmm. So I feel I've been really lucky, and I need to be more intentional about my marketing. And I do find if my biggest group of clients, 57%, one or both spouses are small business owners. That's a natural market for me. I get a small business owner just intuitively.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a very high close rate with small business owners.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, actually, a lawyer going into this, Matt, your perception, I mean, people perceive lawyers, you know, as pillars of integrity, of smarts. Like, don't discount that. I think that would be a great thing.
Right. Well, and I would think so, too. But, again, for whatever reason, I wasn't finding the success attracting clients. It wasn't easy, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, and,
Matt,
you know,
what are the steps you've taken so far to try to let people know that financial planning is something that you're doing?
Well, when I was with Sistina, I wasn't ready to announce to the world that I was doing it because I was still trying to keep it under the radar. At that point in time, I was still an employee of, I mean, although I work for a law firm now, and they also have a title company. I was an employee of the title company, but because the real estate market has done so poorly, that is when we have had to rely on our law firm practice to sustain both operations. And that's why I've really had a lot of exposure to the practice of law, the traditional practice of law, which is good because it has convinced me that that is not for me. But, you know, I spoke to some clients, and as I said, I mean, they started sending me more legal work. I'm like, no, you're not listening to me. I want to get out. And so why would you send an attorney more work when he's telling you he wants to get out of that profession? So
It does say something, though, about their view of your value to them in general, of your integrity. So I would hope that can actually be a good sign for a lot of this. I think we find that we may need to be a little insistent with our universe of people about what it is that we do and you know, what do we want to be known for. And
right.
It may take a little bit a little more effort. It may take come as a surprise, a bit of a shock to some of the people who are used to working with you in a legal, legal advisory capacity. And that shock may take the form of, oh, well, if you need that legal work done, I'll be glad to refer you to somebody to do that. I don't do that anymore. And
right.
You may get a response like, oh, wow, you're really serious about this. You know, why they might not have thought you were serious before. Or maybe they thought you were serious, but for other people, it's not always logical why people make those decisions the way they do. But I would not be surprised to see that the more you insist on on receiving that kind of client into your life, the more they're likely to show up. I can't explain it, but it does seem to work out that way.
I think they can probably sense commitment. And before,
yeah.
As I said, I wasn't ready to announce to the world.
Mm-hmm.
But differently now, I mean, I know I have to do something. And my choices right now are either go the financial planning route,
mm-hmm.
Or look for something that's, I don't know, more traditionally stable, more of an employee.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest with you, I hate to lose the experience I've got in the world of real estate if I have to go that route. But, you know, there's a lot of companies that have real estate departments, and that knowledge could pass over to that. It's
yeah.
Just trying to figure out, I mean, the big concern I have is, without question, if I were to go the financial planning route, it would involve sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be very trying emotionally because you're going to have there's going to be challenges with it.
Sure.
And can you endure those? It's important that you see signs that there's reasons to continue enduring that. And that's where, you know, clients coming in every once in a while or acquiring clients would come into play.
Yeah.
But that's my big concern. Do I have it in me to go through that?
Yeah.
Right now I'm frustrated with my career right now, can I tolerate another couple years of frustration? Or is it, you know, is it 5 years of additional frustration?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. You guys don't know either.
No, that's true. I mean, that would be like trying to predict the stock market.
Yeah.
One thing that does occur to me is, you know, Lois is right when she says that you do need to let people know what it is that you're doing. You know, don't keep the secret to yourself. But one thing that, and as we like to say in ACA, there's no client waiting for you under your desk.
Right.
You do have to go get the client. For many of us, myself included, there was a lot of fear around that because we're very uncomfortable with the idea of selling.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best benefits I got from ACA was an understanding of how to prospect and how to acquire clients without turning into a used car salesman.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one thing I noticed in interviewing or in talking to various fee-only financial planners.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing well, but they definitely did not convey that image of being a car salesman. And for that
right.
reason, I thought, gosh, you know, maybe this is, you know, this is the only route I could go if it's in the world of financial services.
Yeah.
When I got out of college, I had interviewed with one company. I think it was Merrill Lynch. And their interview was basically, okay, how many people do you know? Put it on a list. And I knew right then and there that's who they were going to send me out after.
Right.
They were looking for someone to be a salesman. And I know you have to sell yourself.
Right. But there's a way to do that by taking the high road.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what ACA teaches us about. You know, about prospecting to, you know, your friends and your family. I mean, these are people who are more than just prospects, of course. So if you are going to prospect to them, there's a particular way to do it that's the high road, not the low road. And
mm-hmm.
we do teach our members how to take that high road, how to be able to reach people who, you know, one of my most recent clients, they're friends of mine for close to 30 years now. But they came to me because they said, you know, I made very clear, you know, you don't have any obligation to work with me. And when I say something like that, they say, well, and, you know, you're not going to hurt my feelings if you go to somebody else. And every time I say something like that to a client, they say something like, no, you don't understand. You're the only person I trust with this much confidential information.
Mm-hmm.
Because when your clients are coming to you, it's sort of like what I talked about at Financial Planning for Lawyers with the whole, you know, you are already the trusted advisor in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Financially speaking, it's a lot like when they select a physician. They're choosing who they're going to get financially undressed in front of.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's a little bit of an uncomfortable metaphor, then maybe it gives us the slightest impression of how uncomfortable it is for a client to admit to us how much credit card debt they have or what mistake they think was inexcusable that they made financially years ago or, you know, what they're ashamed of financially,
mm-hmm.
but that which we need to know to help them, you know, make that change. That's all about a relationship of trust, and the fact that you have clients who are bringing you more work that you can do now. It might not be work that's your favorite work. Obviously, they already trust you.
Right.
So that's a plus as far as what your long-term prospects look like for being able to bring in clientele. You'll go through dry spells, and there will be times when you'll say, wow, can I handle all these clients?
Mm-hmm.
The first 12 clients are the toughest 12 clients to get. The next 12 clients are the second toughest to get. And the next 12 clients are not as tough as that for reasons that you can probably, just intuitively identify.
Right.
And the question I think I would want you to ask yourself is, well, comparing a salaried position someplace, which I heard you say is one option for you.
Right.
When you compare that to the idea of running your own financial planning practice, which one is going to give you more long-term satisfaction? Which one, if you don't try it, is the one that has you saying, yeah, I really wish back in 2013 I had given that a shot.
Right.
Whichever one seems to be the tougher road, but the one that would give you more satisfaction, give that very serious thought. I'm 51, and I heard somebody say recently that at our age, one of the biggest risks is that our lives turn into nothing but management of regrets. Whether or not that applies to you is, I don't know, but I do think that decision about, what's going to make me the most satisfied with my life goes a long way toward your figuring out how hard you're willing to work at something. And,
right.
I never thought I would want to run my own business of any kind. I always thought I would want someone else to make paychecks for me. But I have been through the dot-com bubble bursting. There was another recession in there that most of us don't remember anymore. And, of course, I've been through 2008 and its aftermath. And I didn't realize I was creating a counter-recessionary business, but but that's what I've got. And I would see other people in personal finance and ask them, how's business? And they'd say, well, everybody's having a tough time now. And I'd think to myself, should I tell them I just had another record year? There can be some survivor guilt that goes along with that. But gosh, it takes 60 people to fire me. I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
So
that's good perspective.
It takes some time to get there, but
but
I wouldn't go back. There are parts of the job I like better than others, but if ACA did not exist, I'd want someone to invent it so that I could have this experience in my life.
Well, let me ask you that. So what parts of the business don't you like, the two of you?
Figuring out what technology I have to have and then finding a new one and having to learn it.
Uh-huh.
I want something to – I'm like, this is what I want. I want technology to be like a car. I turn a key and it works.
Oh, I am with you. Yep.
Yeah.
And I have no tolerance for a lot of technology.
Yeah. That to me, I love everything. And when I do learn a new technology, I kind of kick myself because it takes me a long time to try it. And I'm like, oh, this is pretty fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the biggest figuring it out.
Lois,
right.
How do you feel that the some of the things like the ACA spreadsheets, do you feel that those helped you to minimize some of those technology problems?
Absolutely.
And that did give you a leg up that you don't think you'd have had otherwise?
A huge leg up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The ACA, the systems, I just love. But it's like, okay, my scanner goes down, my phone system. It's that kind of, I'm trying to do paperless, and what does that mean? And is my cloud storage secure? And blah, blah. Yeah, the ACA system I have loved and found it to be, technology-wise, almost idiot-proof. Because if I can figure it out, that means anybody can. Because that's not my skill set, really. My strength is dealing with people. And they think I'm like this brilliant guru because I've got two computer screens and I can move an Excel spreadsheet. And they're like, wow, look at her. I'm like, if you only knew.
Yeah.
Well, don't sell yourself short, Lois, because you
I don't. I BS in front of those. I'm like, oh, yes, and look at what happens here. So, Kim, what about you?
I would say that my biggest frustration right now is the United States Congress. I think it's unconscionable, and this is not party-based, but I think it's unconscionable to have a tax system where people don't know what their tax liability is until the year is over. And I'm not casting stones at any political party or any political leader or leaders because we have many years of, for instance, not knowing what's going to happen with alternative minimum tax until very close to the end of the year. That's something that, and I need to do a better job of, quite frankly, not being quite so concerned about things that are out of my control, and instead focus on the things that are in my control. Not unlike, you know, the approach we tell our clients for dealing with their investments. So one of my frustrations right now, I'm going to sound like a shell, Matt, but one of my frustrations right now is that I want to make sure that this recent burst of growth that I've had doesn't leave me too busy for, you know, to serve my clients adequately. I don't want this to turn into a runaway train. So we're getting ready to do some hiring. My biggest anxiety is for the administrative assistant position, because the administrative assistant who I have and who's been working here for 2+ years is going on to other things in August, and excuse me, and there'll be big shoes to fill. So that's just a big unknown. And at this point, it's unknowable. I don't get to know ahead of time how satisfied I'll be with the person who ends up sitting at the desk that Anna sits at now.
The problem is, a lot of times you know you have to take these steps in order to grow because you don't have the time.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow you got to find time to figure that new system out or how you need to restructure things.
Right.
That gets difficult.
Yeah, and I think one ACA advantage is that they, yes, we have to learn a new system, but the system that the ACA, you know, to begin our careers as ACA planners, but the system that you're being taught is as straightforward a system that actually works as you can find. I don't know if you remember, Matt, in the materials for Financial Planning for Lawyers, I have a quote from Einstein that's often corrupted to be, everything should be made as simple as possible, but no simpler. And I think that's a good description of what we've got. Everything is as simple as it should be, but nothing is oversimplified to the point of us pointing a client in the wrong direction, say. So, and there's room within the system for a variety of different philosophical approaches. As ACA members, you know, people can be dedicated indexers like I am, but they don't have to be dedicated indexers, and it's still, the system still functions in a way that's beneficial for our clients.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. One last, maybe last question. You know, I don't want to take up too much of your time, but, and hopefully this isn't too much of an open-ended question, but typical day, what is it? Does such a thing exist? And you guys mentioned, or I think it may have been Ken, you mentioned developing a full financial plan. Is that the bulk of your practice, or does it involve seeing clients on a regular basis, whether it's quarterly, semi-annually, or schedule based on that?
Our full financial plans do keep us in touch with our clients on a regular basis.
Okay.
Lois, do you do primarily a retainer practice in the traditionally?
Almost exclusively a retainer practice.
Yeah, and mine's the same. So we're establishing retainer relationships where in the first year I may meet with a client 12 times, and in renewal years we might meet 3 or 4 times. So I get to know the clients very well, and by getting to know them very well, I can add a lot more value to their lives. Typical day is a little harder for me to really pin down. Of course, the typical day that we just came out of a few weeks ago was doing a tax return, but some ACA members include tax preparation in their practice. Others do not. Sort of like something you said earlier, Matt, I used to say when I was practicing law that if I said the word tax while I was in my law office, it was malpractice. I never would have imagined that I would actually be doing taxes for clients, but it actually turns out to be kind of like a great big crossword puzzle, and we can save them so much money compared to what they've been paying with say one of the national tax preparation firms, and they may think their CPA knows enough about their situation to tell them what they should be doing with their investments, but during tax season, their CPA is very busy doing taxes most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if I'm misrepresenting anything here, Lois, but if I'm inaccurate about any of this,
No, you're not. I love hearing your perspective. You know, I think trying to find a discipline for me of what a typical day is, making sure I'm getting what I need to get done. But what I love is that there's so much variety in what goes on in the day, whether I'm, you know, part of it's you're always kind of marketing, but then you're working on current client stuff and then just, you know, getting the work done. And I'm trying to I finally moved to I only have client meetings on certain days because I wasn't as efficient as I needed to be. And I found that I really need at least one day a week when I don't see clients so I can just, you know, figure out what's going on. And you never know. Yesterday I had two clients drop by unexpectedly to drop some stuff off, and it turns out they both just needed to talk about something that was going on. And I wasn't doing financial planning, but the value that we had in that conversation is huge. You know? So there's not a typical day, which I love. But at the same time, I always am very conscious of, you know, I keep a running to-do list, make sure this gets done by, you know, they're coming in. And I feel much better when I'm prepared. I've got two big meetings next week, and by when I leave today, I want to be pretty much ready for them, and I'll have a much better weekend knowing that I'm ready for them.
Yeah. I've got an appellate reply brief to prepare this weekend.
Okay, see, there you go. That just sounds, I wouldn't even know how to begin.
Yeah.
Yeah, appellate practice was the part that I thought I might miss if I ever had to go back to law. Appellate practice.
Oh, really?
Was what I'd want to do. Yeah. I never enjoyed arguing facts. But I always enjoyed arguing law. That had kind of a crossword puzzle aspect to it too that I didn't really think about at the time. But clearly I should just take over from Will Schwartz as editor. Crossword editor of the New York Times, and that's probably my ideal career, except I don't have any skill at that. Sometimes.
Well, Matt, I wish you luck in your process. Okay. Is there anything else we can answer for you?
No, I think that's probably it. I just, you know, I'm looking for the right thing to nudge me along here one way or the other. But like I said, I just know I'm at a point where a decision has to be made. So.
Are you here in the Cleveland area, Matt?
I'm in the Columbus area.
Oh, okay.
But my parents live in Wycliffe.
Oh, okay. If you find that you're going to be up here in Cleveland and you'd like to come by my office sometime and see what the practice is like and talk some more about this, I'd be happy to schedule some time with you.
Okay. I appreciate that.
And Matt, one piece of advice that I think has always worked for me, because I've been self-employed now for almost 15 years, is sometimes I have to stop thinking and just do.
Oh, I know.
And just jump into the deep end, and I'll figure it out. And I can just, we have so many choices, it becomes, you know, choice paralysis. I'm like, you know what, just try it. Just stop dilly-dallying, just jump in and do it, and stop the what-ifs. Well, should I? And it that has worked really well for me. Instead of saying, well, should I do this software, should I do that, who should my custodian be? Make a decision and move.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's been really helpful for me. And if you, you know, just go for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Because where they're needed. You know what? I believe the market, there can't be enough of us out there.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly think it's the best approach out there for advising people about finances.
And there are a lot of ACA members in Columbus. Columbus is a real stronghold of ACA advisors, and you could probably find a variety of different types of ACA practice down there. So don't hesitate to look for the ACA advisors there and ask if somebody has time to let you come by and talk with them about what their practice is like, because within this system there are a number of different ways to do things. So.
Yeah, and this is Kathy. I was gonna mention, Matt, too. One Columbus advisor who might be a good person to talk to is Jill Gianola.
Okay.
She's a long-term ACA member, but has also just been very active in the fee-only community. And I mean, I don't know any one of our members who ever, went the Sestina route, but she probably knows more about that.
Mm-hmm.
than the typical ACA member. I mean, if that's because I get the sense that you still kind of have some questions about that and how it might compare. If that's true, I mean, she'd be a great person to talk to anyway. But you know, she might have a little more insight than any of us here do. That opportunity.
Well, you had given me some names, Kathy, of some others. One gentleman, I guess, also had a real estate law practice, I believe, and so it's just, you know, I haven't had a chance to talk to them yet, but at some point, as Lois has said, you can interview the world, but ultimately, if you need to make a decision, jump, you need to do it.
Yep. Well, so. I know many of us kind of fight that sort of choice paralysis, and believe me, that we have some prospective members who have been prospective members for years, and they still contact me once or twice a year.
Right.
Anyway, but
okay.
Ken and Lois, thank you so much. I so enjoyed just listening in and hearing, learning more about your stories and your current practice, too. And Matt, thanks for being on the call. And if there's anything I can do, any other information you need, please don't hesitate to contact me.
Okay, will do. Great. And Ken and Lois, thank you very much. It was
You're
very
welcome.
Helpful.
Thank you, Matt. Good
thanks
luck in your
us.
Search.
All right,
bye, everybody.
Have a great weekend.
Bye, everybody. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.